This message comes from Capital One. Your business faces unique challenges and opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services backed by the strength of a top 10 commercial bank. Visit CapitalOne.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
The comedy series This Fool has a powerful sense of place. And that place is a neighborhood in South Central Los Angeles where an odd couple of cousins named Julio and Luis argue and help each other and try to figure out what's next. Both for Luis, who recently got out of prison, and for Julio, who began the series as a rule-following caseworker assigned to help get his cousin back on his feet. Star and co-creator Chris Estrada, who plays Julio, based a lot of the show on his stand-up, and the second season has just arrived. I'm Linda Holmes, and today we're talking about the Hulu series This Fool on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel. On The Sympathizer podcast, host Philip Nguyen joins the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen to discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Support for NPR and the following message come from Rosetta Stone, the perfect app to achieve your language learning goals no matter how busy your schedule gets. It's designed to maximize study time with immersive 10-minute lessons and audio practice for your commute. Plus, tailor your learning plan for specific objectives like travel. Get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
Support for NPR comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
This election season, you can expect to hear a lot of news, some of it meaningful, much of it not. Give the Up First podcast 15 minutes, sometimes a little less, and we'll help you sort it out, what's going on around the world and at home. 3 stories, 15 minutes, Up First every day. Listen every morning, wherever you get your podcasts.
Joining me today is freelance journalist Cristina Escobar. She's the co-founder and editor-in-chief of LatinaMedia.co. Welcome back, Cristina.
Thank you so much for having me.
I am so excited to talk about this show with you. This Fool is now in its second season on Hulu. Chris Estrada developed it based in part on his stand-up. He worked with co-creators Pat Bishop, Jake Wiseman, and Matt Ingebretson, who created the Comedy Central series Corporate. Estrada plays Julio, a fairly straight-laced guy who lives with his mom and grandma in South Central Los Angeles. He works at a nonprofit called Hugs Not Thugs that does rehab with former gang members and people who have been incarcerated. When Julio's cousin Luis, played by Frankie Quinones, gets out of prison, he comes to live with Julio and also becomes a client at Hugs Not Thugs, where Julio is his caseworker. Hugs Not Thugs is run by Minister Payne, played by Michael Imperioli. At the end of the first season, Hugs Not Thugs went under just after Luis graduated. So in the second season, we find Julio out of work and Luis now working as a security guard at a men's store. And Luis even has an interest in a woman named Ruby, played by Ivana Rojas. This season finds the guys trying to find a new direction for their lives, perhaps with the help of their old mentor, Minister Payne. Both seasons of This Fool are streaming on Hulu. Cristina, you are really eager to talk about this show, and I am really eager to hear you talk about it. What's your bottom line on This Fool?
It's just funny. There's a lot of really strong humor in the show. You know, when I first started watching the first season, I watched the pilot, and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to hate this show. So rarely do we get Latino shows, and it was so masculine and so sophomoric. I was like, this is going to be terrible. I'm not going to be able to write about it. What am I going to do? But the longer I watched it, the smarter and funnier to me it got. It still leans on those jokes. Like, there are plenty of penis-sized jokes in this one.
Yes, there are.
It's a recurring theme. But there's a lot of, like, silly adolescent-type humor. But there's also really smart social critique. There's really hilarious depictions of what it is to be Mexican-American, Chicano, of Latinidad that literally had me cackling while I was watching it by myself. And I guess I just really feel like Chris Estrada has a unique voice that we don't really see. It is pretty rare to see working class people tell their own stories on TV. It's even more rare for them to be Latino and then to be so deeply rooted in his particular experience. I think it's a pretty fun and unique show that really doesn't feel like anything else.
Yeah, I really think the performances on this particular show are probably my favorite thing about it. I think, you know, there's an interview that Estrada did with Jesse Thorne on the podcast Bullseye, and they talked about his desire not to have these necessarily be like nice people. And he talks about how I wasn't really going for them to be really pleasant. I wasn't trying to make Ted Lasso is one of the things he said. And I think that one of the ways that I was able to kind of key into parts of this show were to understand that those performances are really carefully calibrated to try to walk directly on that line between a person who is like kind of, you know, unpleasant, but still kind of rootable in a way. Because I think there's no question they're not meant to be nice people, but you are kind of meant to want good things for them.
Well, you don't necessarily want their wishes to come true. You want them to change and be better. Like, they're
right,
bad.
Absolutely.
They're self-sabotaging, and you're rooting for them to, like, for them to change, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, there is a dislikable part, but it's not so much that they're not likable as that they, like, they need to be, like, pushed to change and be better and grow. And the show does challenge them in a good way.
Yeah.
Gives you some hope on that front.
Yeah, I think it was so interesting to me to hear you say that this pilot was sort of off-putting to you, because it was off-putting to me, too. And I really was concerned about whether – obviously, I did a lot of interrogating that reaction, if I can put it that way. And I did think about, you know – it is so much more common for me to see elements of my experience represented, as you're saying, like those people on Friends really, you know, had elements of their experience that were familiar to me. So I did do a lot of interrogating that reaction. And I think what I eventually came up with was like part of it is certainly the same stuff that you were talking about, that it is very, as you said, very masculine and kind of juvenile. But I also realized I am a person where the comedy of intense conflict and people whose love language is sort of yelling at each other and swearing at each other is super, super beloved. It is a comedy staple. And what it reminded me of was the fact that I've never been an It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia person.
Mm.
I mean, I think the people on that show are more dislikable probably than these people.
Yeah.
But it is a very like intense people's, as I said, love language is kind of yelling at each other and sort of saying what I would consider to be horrible things to each other. And so it's just a pure, my taste in comedy doesn't necessarily run to that. But the more I watched this show, the more I was able to understand like how, I think how really carefully calibrated those performances from Estrada, but also from Quiñones and from Michael Imperioli and from everybody, they're really trying to land on a very, very small target, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think they hit it. I think the first season, I would describe this structure as like a reverse onion. Like you start with the nugget and then it like layers on top.
Mm-hmm.
And the structure of it, I felt like was really beautiful until you end with this like damn the rich type of critique, this like very strong class analysis with Fred Armiston. And I thought that that really worked. It was funny, just like gutturally funny, and how it played out and how it worked. But then also it showed as the show went on and the characters became less types and more people, or at least more complex, that it got more interesting. It had more to say, and it really felt like a very smart and well-constructed show.
Yeah.
With the second season, it doesn't have that super strong structure. It kind of meanders a little bit.
Yeah.
There's not too much of a plot, and what plot there is, I think, kind of starts in like episode 4 of the 10-episode arc.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, as with so many shows now, you do get one episode in the second season where they kind of just go off of the main thrust of the story and go spend time with Julio's mom as she's retiring, which on the one hand, like, it's a fun story. Lois Smith is in that episode. Lois Smith is always great and fun to watch. But, like, I did feel like that came at a moment when I sort of wanted them to be like, no, I'm into what the guys are doing. Like, I don't want the departure episode right now. And so I did feel like the structure of the second season had maybe a few more kind of quirks to it that I wasn't as sure were entirely working. It's a show that's like 50% episodic and 50% serialized. It's like it does have ongoing stories, but it also, like, each episode is a little, this is the episode where, you know, there's a competing coffee shop. And so it is like a combination of those things. And I think the serialized elements maybe in the second season held together a little less well for me. One thing I do want to talk to you about, though, is, as we mentioned in the intro, I feel like this is such an LA show, and I definitely often had the feeling that, like, as a non-LA person, that I was missing some of its charms.
That definitely could be. So one of the things that I noted as someone who doesn't live in LA but did live there for a long time and my family is from there, there's a moment where they do a montage of Los Angeles and they play Randy Newman's I Love LA song.
Yes, they do.
And that's what they play at Dodger games. Mm-hmm. Which, like, maybe if you don't live there, if you don't go there, you don't know. But, like, Dodger games are like a Latino mainstay of the city. That's our team. We show out, we show up. It's a huge part of it. And so to see that and then to have the montage be not, there's no Rodeo Drive, there's no big palm trees and blue skies. It's instead this part of LA that usually doesn't make it to the screens, right? It's more of the hard scrabble neighborhoods with, like, the signs in multiple languages hand-painted and that sort of thing. I thought was a really smart way to, like, not to necessarily, like, give one to the city, but to show, like, a different part of the city and what it is to really live there and to be the people who make the city function and who make it live and breathe, and how it feels really different for the vast majority of Los Angeles Evangelino inhabitants.
Yeah, and I think the attention that's given to constructing the neighborhood that Julio and Luis live in, the attention that's given to building that neighborhood is really admirable. And one of the episodes that I enjoyed the most and think is kind of the funniest is the episode in which a rooster sort of upsets the balance of the neighborhood, mm-hmm. Because naturally roosters are loud. And there are so many complex dynamics among neighbors introduced in that episode that I really love that little, like, neighborhood story.
I loved it too. And, you know, there aren't a lot of Latino stories. There aren't a lot of specific Mexican-American stories. And generally, when we get Mexican-American stories in Los Angeles, they're in East LA. The vast majority is Latino. Chris Estrada, I got to interview him for season one before the strikes. And he said, you know, he didn't grow up in one of those neighborhoods. He grew up in a mixed neighborhood, which is mm-hmm. actually where my family is from as well. And he grew up in a neighborhood that was Black and Latino and, you know, other folks, and that he wanted to show that as a big part of what it is to live in Los Angeles as well. And I thought that episode captured a lot of the realness of that, of how people relate, of how they don't relate. The Spanish in that episode is hilarious. Who speaks it, who doesn't, how well. But the racial relations are also hilarious, but specific, right? Really specific to being neighbors, to being neighbors in a working class neighborhood, but one where everyone has, like, their own houses. Like, I felt like he did a really smart job of sort of showing something that was part of his experience, making it bigger, but keeping it also specific. It's a little gem of an episode. It's the one that opens the season, and I thought it really laid a nice groundwork, even if it didn't really set up any plot.
Absolutely. I think it really captures something about how people feel about their house and their lawn and their neighborhood and their peace and quiet when they feel that this is something that's a really big and important part of my life and family.
For sure. I mean, I think, like, the word community gets thrown around a lot, but you actually get a sense of the community, and it doesn't feel romanticized, but it also doesn't feel demonized either, right?
No.
Like, most of the portrayals I feel like we've gotten about South Central Los Angeles are like, hellscape.
Right.
Fire and brimstone.
Right.
Terrible. And this is not that, but it's not like heroes either. These are regular folks trying to live their life, trying to make peace with their neighbors, trying to, like, get along, but who also know each other, who pay attention to each other, who care might be too big of a word, but who are, like, broadly looking out for the other person and are aware.
But that's what I mean. Like, they're invested. There is an investment in the neighborhood that I enjoy watching a lot.
No, it was good. It was good.
Yeah. I want to ask you how you feel about the Michael Imperioli character, because having watched Michael Imperioli on The Sopranos and on, for a while, he was on Law and Order and a while ago, and he's done, don't get me wrong, he's done a ton of things and he's done other comedic things. But I find him so funny and odd in this show, playing this guy who sort of runs, as we find him at the beginning, runs this nonprofit, really cares about all these guys, but kind of eventually they unfold him to be very, very weird. And I'm curious about how you feel about that character.
I have had a whole career in nonprofits in addition to my journalism stuff. And there is a lot of really strong nonprofit jokes, particularly in the first season. You know, in the second season, they're moving to a for-profit model. But there's still a lot of really, I thought, hilarious bits. And I felt like he was really well casted, partly because Julio and Luis are also really weird dudes. Like, they're they're strange. Yes. They're strange in their mannerisms. They're particular. They're not, I would say, invested in being, like, cool or normal. They're sort of past that stage of life, but also doesn't seem like something that, particularly for Julio as our main character and kind of our perspective, has ever been of interest to him. So I feel like Minister Payne is a strong character. I felt like his arc worked a little bit better in season one, mostly because the plot just worked better than in season two.
Yeah.
But they still give him some, like, good growth and some good stuff to do. And when they're sort of doing the getting the gang back together episode and he comes to his realization, it is very funny.
Yeah, it is. I was so interested in something that you were saying about Julio and Luis being weird dudes. And I agree so much with that. And it made me think about the fact that one of my issues with the first couple of episodes is between the way that Luis is behaving, the way that Julio's mom and grandma are behaving, and the way that his girlfriend behaves at the time, as of the beginning of the show, his girlfriend. I felt like, is this a show about, like, a nice man just getting besieged by bullies, you know? But I did have that feeling of, like, is that the dynamic? Is this show just, like, watch this nice man get picked on by all these really nasty people who are mad at him all the time? But as it develops, like, he becomes, I think, significantly more complicated. And you get to that moment where you're like, yeah, he's not that nice, actually.
He is not that nice. And you actually see that if you've watched any of Chris Estrada's stand-up, that he sort of plays with some of those concepts.
Yeah, which I hadn't.
Yeah. And it's good. I feel like he does a good job of it and his character develops. And I also think one of the really strengths of season two is that the people around him develop. I felt like we got a really good sense of who he is and maybe a little bit of who Luis is in the first season. But in the second season, it's a much more full world and there are more women characters. There are more women characters with more interesting things to do. Mm-hmm. Michelle Ortiz as Maggie is the on-again, off-again girlfriend, gets like her own arc really, where we get to see who she is outside of her relationship with Julio. And I thought that bit was hilarious as well, where she's bringing the difficult and also causes the mayhem in a way that I don't think we see a lot of women characters often get to do.
Yeah.
And still be someone you root for, right, to your earlier point. And so in some ways, the second season is less about Julio because he's had so much development in the first season and more about—
Yeah, I think that's a fair point.
Yeah, more about the development of the world, which is fun to see. Like, even though— In most other shows that I've seen that have had that, I would say, pretty masculine, pretty sophomoric perspective, I don't like that generally, although I've talked to some dudes who do like it. I know that's a personal preference, but on this show, I think they sort of make it all work by having it be for a purpose more than just like a stupid laugh. Like, the stupid laughs build to a more meaningful, I don't want to say poignant, but like incisive laugh.
Yeah. I think what I appreciate the most about this show is actually related to what made it, like, not necessarily my exact speed, which is that it does have such a specificity, not just the specificity of place and all of that, but it does have such a particular tone. And I think, as you're saying, it comes from Estrada's stand-up and, you know, his approach that, as I said, that he was describing as, like, not trying to have the people be that nice. It has such a particular kind of idiosyncratic feel to it. And that's, as you were saying, like, that's what you really want, is you really want singular voices to be able to have an opportunity to tell stories. I think that's ultimately where I come down on this show, even though I still have a little bit of that, like, shows where there's a lot of, like, insult comedy between people tend to make me kind of, I don't know, they make me tense. It's the same reason I've never been a person who watches It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And so I felt when I came into this, like, everybody is kind of yelling at each other and insulting each other. And it just makes me, it just makes me tense. And even if I react to it that way, it's like, yeah, but you want people to have their really particular tone and style and voice. And that's what I super appreciate about this show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I will say I'm Chicana, and that sort of teasing love, maybe, you know, it is perhaps too extreme because this is a sitcom, but that is definitely part of La Cultura. It's part of how we relate and act with each other.
This is one of the things I thought about. I thought about, like, I know this is all.
And yeah. I will also say, watching it, one of the things I noted is there's, in both seasons, there's a lot of really, I think, funny, just like Latino stuff. And I'm sort of curious how it lands to people outside of the community. Like, the moment that has stuck with me the most was there's a part where our main character is being held hostage in a convenience store and his mom calls. He answers the call. He's trying to explain to her what happens. And he doesn't know the word hostage in Spanish. And he crowdsources it and nobody else knows the word hostage in Spanish.
Hey. How do you guys say hostage in Spanish?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Soy un hostage?
I was like dying with laughter. It was so funny to me. The experience of not knowing a word, even in a clutch situation, of not knowing how to handle it, of needing to tell your mom that you're being held in a hostage situation, of having that type of like constant contact relationship, just the whole bit to me. And there's a lot of funny bits in that part. But that particular moment really encapsulated the show for me and what was so, so funny about it.
Yeah. And I definitely clocked, obviously not in the same way as you, but there are recurring jokes around Spanish. And as you mentioned earlier, kind of like who speaks it, who doesn't speak it, how well they speak it. There's a comfort around making those jokes that you wouldn't get if it wasn't really coming from a place of knowing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely, like, they were in jokes a little bit, right?
Right, exactly, exactly. I think they find a great balance where those jokes certainly make sense to me and are funny to me, but they're extra funny to you.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of, you know, that's a lovely place to land. And I enjoyed those elements a lot, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we want to know what you think about This Fool. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Christina Escobar, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much again for having me, Linda.
This episode is produced by Hafsa Fathima and Mike Katsif and edited by Jessica Reedy. Hello, Come In provides our theme music. Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Linda Holmes, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Vuori, a new perspective on performance apparel. Clothing designed with premium fabrics, built to move in, styled for life. For 20% off your first purchase, go to vuori.com/NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Online. Is your child asking questions on their homework you don't feel equipped to answer? IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. One subscription gets you everything. One site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And NPR listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as the Black experience, you'll hear it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.